You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Trudy Benson. Trudy, thanks so much for being with me today.
My pleasure, Brainerd. I'm happy to be here.
So, Trudy, we're going to talk about the show Ecstatic at Miles McHenry Gallery. And it's a beautiful show of paintings that I'm excited to talk about. But to begin with, let's talk about the title, because the title, Ecstatic, is references computer art, right, on contemporary abstraction. Is that correct?
In a way, yeah. I think I was thinking about overall the way that word looks and how I spelled it different than the normal spelling with an X. So all of the paintings are kind of dealing with the orthogonal, and there's a lot of like intersecting lines at right angles and just off right angles. So there's a lot of places where things intersect. And also I like that word because the second part of it, static, has, it has a couple of different feelings to it. It's like a dull static can be kind of energetic, but at the same time kind of droning. And then I think overall the word as a whole, the paintings just have that kind of frenetic energy.
Yeah, kind of almost joyous energy, it seems to me. It's, these aren't dark works, right?
Yeah, they're pretty colorful and joyful, I would say.
Yeah, I like that. No, it's a great feeling to them. And the relationship to computer art is what?
Yeah. So I think I have this kind of nostalgia for this specific period in computer art when I was growing up, with older digital imaging programs like Mac Paint and MS Paint that were, super limited. And I think that when I was, using those programs as a kid, it was really kind of my first attempt at making abstraction. So, and it was different than, drawing, pen to paper. For me, just having the kind of toolbar with all the different materials on the side, in a way, kind of opened me up a bit more creatively. that's what I'm kind
of
interesting.
So let's talk about that time a little bit. It's such a kind of a time capsule back to that. So yeah, those early kind of programs that were on your early Macs and kind of, getting people to draw a bit on the computer, but it wasn't actually drawing. It was something else, right? Were you using them then, and what were you making then?
Yeah, I was using an old, a Mac. I think it was called a Mac SE. It was kind of the monitor and the CPU were in one big kind of cubic piece. I should say my dad's a computer programmer, so even at the time it was kind of an outdated computer. So I had a mouse and it was just black and white. So there was, the line was heavily pixelated. The spray was kind of just a scatter of dots. And the fill bucket was different black and white patterns.
Yeah, it's such a different way of making work. And so what is your nostalgia for that? Like, I'm looking at 222, right? And that also has patterns in it that has, is that in part the references, has areas that are solid and also lines running through it. I mean, of course, you're taking it in your own direction, but is that the direct references, that kind of pattern fill and other things that were happening?
And I think also the mix of the way I'm thinking about the abstract painting and layers and also the mix of different paint applications. So all the paintings, they're all completely handmade. I don't use a computer in any of it. I don't even use a projector or anything like that. But I use an airbrush to spray. So the really fine patterning is with an airbrush. And yeah, I think with the black and white in particular, it really references those kind of pattern fills.
Yeah, that's such an interesting kind of mix. I mean, there's another one called Flash, which is quite different than 222, and that's spelled, of course, T-W-O-T-O and T-O-O. Flash, yeah, is also really colorful, a different kind of composition. And is Flash representing also software at the time, or no? That, I mean, that title, you know, strikes me as, was this about Flash?
Well, the title, I think the title is, I was think the impasto lines on top, which are oil paint squeezed that I mix up and retube and then squeeze from the tube onto the canvas, the red, and it's like a chartreuse cadmium. I was thinking about those lines and the way they're shaped as kind of almost like lightning, and how the whole painting, I think if you're in the room with it, it can kind of vibrate just with the, you know, the different, the kind of hypnotic line work and then with the highly contrasting colors on top.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because that's what I found when I was there in front of the work. Sometimes there's vibrations that happen. There's you know, things that happen with colors that remind me almost of kind of Auber's homage to a square paintings. Of course, something very different is happening here. And even though this is geometric, there's something, you know, very organic about all these lines. But is that part of how you're thinking, this kind of, in terms of color or color theory, that you're looking for vibrations or optical kind of phenomena?
Yeah, definitely. I think something, Albers is a huge influence to me, and just how colors are, you know, a variable based on what color is next to them. And I'm always thinking about that and how the extruded paint on top can kind of pass through every color on the painting, and what, when it's doing that, it changes color itself.
That's so interesting. You know, I mean, for me, Albers was one of the kind of primary experiences that got me into, I think, just looking at art. You know, I was something like 15 or 16 and looking at those, and, you know, my mother was explaining to me that there's so much happening off the canvas, and to me that brought in a whole other world. And so you know, what you're doing here also feels that way. There's another one called Blue Planet, and this is a different palette, right? These kind of reds really come forward, and then there's this whole world in the background that really interesting things are happening in terms of just the colors moving back and forth. It feels almost quilt-like, but then there's this, to me, as I remember, there's kind of a tension between colors that are coming forward and colors that are areas of color that are moving back. So we're in a kind of almost a kind of a moving space. Is that something that you think about when working on it? Because to me, that was partly what was fascinating, almost like a maze. I'm trying to like get into these paintings literally. And I'm being moved around a lot, both, you know, horizontally within the work, but then there's this forward backward depth thing.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you experience them that way, because I always like to think about them as, I want the different parts of them to almost feel tangible and floating in this kind of space. And Blue Planet in particular, I think, is kind of its own world. And in the palette, you can almost kind of just get, you know, swim around in it. That's, it has like a, you know, a moodiness that some of the other ones don't have.
And, you know, I mean, abstraction, it takes so many different, like, you know, we're in this, I don't know what you call the era we're in now in terms of painting. I see so much painting in New York. I see a lot of different types of abstraction, of course, figurative work mm-hmm. too. How do you see abstraction at the moment in terms of peers, painters, and where you're fitting in? Because we're in a different sort of world in terms of what's happening, right? I see everything happening. I see a ton of painting, but I see a lot of things happening on the surface. I see a lot of interesting illusions happening, but also figurative work, narratives. So if that's not too odd a question, how do you see yourself in that context? Because it's changed so much over the years, especially since the time you're referencing of early computer drawing programs.
I think a lot of the painters that I'm in conversation with are like, I think Joanne Greenbaum and Jonathan Lasker, Peter Halley, that's maybe kind of a bit of an older group than my generation. But then there's also some people that I think I have a connection with, like Andrea Marie Brayling, who's just making these, you know, and they're very different paintings, but they're spray paint abstractions, but they have this kind of like ephemeral floating quality. I think as far as content, it's a bit different, but if you're thinking about just the approach to painting, there's a connection there. Albert Ullin is a big influence to me also, especially, of course, his computer paintings.
That's so interesting. And Peter Halley, I mean, that's an interesting association, right? There's something, of course, very different happening in your work, and Peter Halley's work seems, you know, from a different time now. Of course, his like work keeps evolving in its way, but it has a certain kind of stamp on it. Yours, to me, feels what seems so different is this kind of perspective or this background that has not quite a landscape, but these, it almost feels like there is no straight lines in your work. I don't know if that's true or not, but though they're geometric shapes, we're not looking typically at straight lines, right?
Yeah, no. So, yeah, I don't use any kind of, there's no straight lines at all. I use some tape, but then the way that I use the tape is I cover the whole painting with masking tape and then cut into it with an X-Acto knife, so it's never a perfect straight line.
Oh, you're cutting into it. Okay, so that's really interesting too. So you mean it's kind of would that be subtractive? You're adding layers onto it and then you're peeling layers away, so there's an element of surprise that's happening too?
Well,
no.
Yes. So, kind of both. I start out with the kind of more solid squares, and so those aren't really an element of surprise. But then I cover them back up while I'm doing the, you know, what you see visually as the background is actually the second layer. It just recedes backwards. And then once I pull the tape off the colored squares, you know, there is that element of like, oh, kind of what's happening in the painting. And so it's kind of almost like a stencil, but, you know, I can still surprise myself in the painting.
I like that because that surprise, you know, I don't know if the stenciling is the equivalent of all, but it almost seems like printmaking a little bit, you know, that kind of surprise of not quite stenciling, but your process. Is there a relationship to printmaking?
Yeah, I think definitely. I went to Virginia Commonwealth University for my BFA, and the major there isn't painting, it's painting and printmaking. So I took quite, you know, a lot of printmaking classes, and I think that that has, you know, really informed the paintings.
And there's a painting called Like a Song. And, you know, one of the interesting aspects of this painting, which has similarities to the ones we're talking about, which is Blue Planet in 222, but in this one, and I don't know if it's like this in all of them, but there's a kind of dominant line, right, a red line, and it's continuous. Or at least it appears to be that it continues to run around. These aren't kind of shapes. It's almost a path, a kind of, and I don't know if it's meant to be a kind of device compositionally, but it feels like something you have to follow. It feels like something I have to follow. You know, I'm following the line around the canvas, and I'm kind of intrigued and amazed by where it's going, but compositionally it's literally taking me everywhere, right? I'm going to all these places, and then the colors are in the periphery a little bit, but so I just wanted to ask you about that, because not all lines are like that in your work. Some of them, of course, are short and end in different ways, but at least in that one, in that specific way, you have other closed lines, of course, but that one seems unique, and it seems very much kind of calculated, that kind of what's in front of what's behind, when the line's running behind something. So to me, that was part of when I look at this, part of what's carrying my eye all around it and what's bringing me like further into it or not. So yeah, I'm curious about that.
Yeah,
that's also what you're intending. Yeah.
Yeah, I think definitely it's like a part of the reason this painting is called Like a Song is because I think there's almost like a sequence to the way you look at the painting and the way your eye moves around it. And it almost has like, you know, a melody to it and a harmony. But so that red line you're talking about, I think it just kind of bounces your eye around in a different way. And you have the kind of two sides of the painting with in the background. It's more divided than the other works in the show. So yeah, I think I like how it can go behind things that are in front of it and reappear and disappear and almost have kind of a rhythm.
Yeah, I suppose that's a nice way to put it, a rhythm. There seems to be almost a relationship to music there, or maybe poetry even. And I love that. The pattern that you're also using, one thing that seems to be consistent, or it's varied throughout them, is the pattern of the squares in the background. Those are something, you know, I think quite unlike, like you were talking about the fill of gradients or whatever in the early programs. Those backgrounds are very different. They're very dense, and they're very, I don't know how to put it, but something about them seems almost compacted as opposed to the rest. They're a certain way of working that's very different than everything else on the canvas, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's
and,
kind
and,
of the
and, and, it, yeah. No, go on. It's kind of what?
I was going to say it's definitely the slowest and most tedious part of all of the paintings.
And why? Well, what is it about that process? Because, yeah, that's what it feels like. It almost feels like when you know, a kind of obsessive doodling, it almost feels like kind of a sort of outsider art sort of obsessiveness sometimes you see. So, that seems like an enormous amount of time is spent there. Those patterns are very important to you, it seems.
Yeah, I think I started working, I switched up my airbrush during the pandemic. I was, you know, as we all were, spending a lot more time alone, and I was just experimenting more, and I also started making these a different type of drawing, and it's kind of a tessellated drawing. It starts with almost a stair step shape, and it kind of all expands out from there. Yeah, I think to me it's kind of meditative, and something I really like about it is that the process is extremely slow and meditative, and to me oddly satisfying. But the effect is kind of this like, it kind of has a buzzy, static, energetic feeling to it. It has an optical effect as well. So, you know, it has the two sides of it where if you think about how it's made, it feels very tedious, but the experience of it is kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah. I think that's true. That's how it feels. It's great talking to you about all of this, and congratulations on the show. There's links here so people can learn more, listeners can learn more and see more images as well as what we're talking about. I want to ask you one more question, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading T-Zero by Italo Calvino.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure, and I want to wish you well with this wonderful show. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thanks, Brainerd. Great speaking with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.